formation of our consciousness. I have no question about that. And I don't mean this in a negative sense, but I think that's what it's going to take. And I think if we make it, we will be transformed in our consciousness and our relationship.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Listen to Rootstock Radio every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on WEFT Community Radio. Coming up next is In the Know, a WEFT-produced public affairs show that highlights locally available resources. Stay with us after that for Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater at 7, Monday night R&R at 8, live local music on WEFT Sessions at 10, and recorded local music on Champaign Local 901 at 11. We're going to get to some quick underwriting and then hop into In the Know.
By Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including State of Illinois employee insurance, is accepted, and there is also a self-pay sliding scale. Kevin Elliott or his staff can be reached at 398-9066 or ELLIOTTCounselinggroup.com.
You are listening to In the Know, a public affairs radio show on WEF 90.1 FM. I like to describe the show as kind of a chance to talk about, you know, all sorts of different topics, people that don't always get a fair shake when we really need to be talking about these kinds of things in a very candid way. Tonight is an interview that I'm going to be doing in a series where I focus on really the backbone of, you know, a lot of the work that is, you know, being done in the Black community, people who are, you know, successful in bringing up others and just give them that spotlight to show exactly the amazing things that they're doing in the community. So I'm going to have my guest introduce himself, and then we will kind of go along so you can get to know him a little bit better.
Thank you, Sherry. My name is Fred Coleman III.
So you're somebody who's been involved locally. You know, I met you at the Black Chamber, meeting that was recently. And I really wanted to discuss the different things because I was really interested when you were talking about the things that you work on currently. And I always like to be able to show, students exactly how these stories begin. You know, we always hear of the outcome, the headlines, the amazing things people do now. But being able to kind of go back and find out how it all started is always important to me. So tell me a bit about yourself, you know, where you're from, all of those wonderful things.
Okay, sure, be happy to do that. Well, I was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I didn't live there very long. I was moved back to East St. Louis, Illinois, from the time I was 3 months old until I was approximately 10 years old. I was raised by my grandparents. And I was raised by my grandparents because my mom and stepfather were going to college at SIU Carbondale. And so I lived in East St. Louis, Illinois, went to elementary school there. And like I said, until I was about 10 years old. And then when I was 10, when my mother got a teaching position in Flint, Michigan, we pulled the family together and we moved to Flint, Michigan when I was about the middle of the fifth grade and spent the rest of my life growing up in Flint, Michigan until I graduated from high school in about 1971.
So on the surface, it sounds like, you know, a typical story, but who would you say, you know, we all have those people who kind of change the trajectory of our lives. You know, we're kind of going along school, we think we know what we're going to do, and then something just kind of hits us and we're like, that's it, that's what I want to do. So growing up, who would you say was your most influential, it could be a family member, somebody outside of the family?
Well, I've been very fortunate in that I've had great family members, obviously, but also a number of mentors in life. And I think probably it starts off with family initially, and I would say the person who probably had the most significant influence on my life was my grandmother. My grandmother raised me, like I said, until I was about 10 years old. She's a very religious woman. She valued education highly. She was only able to get to about the fifth or sixth grade in her education. But she instilled in me and my parents and my family the importance of education and to stay in school and take advantage of the resources that are there, and that education is the pathway to provide a direction as to wherever you want to go in life, whatever you choose to do. And the resources are there for you to do that if you're willing to put in the work and stay focused. And so those were some values that were instilled in me by my grandmother. Moving further along in life, I'd say a lot of my teachers that I ended up being students of in high school in Flint, there was a little about 4'8" speech teacher that I had when I was in junior high school that assigned me the speech of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, and I had to recite that speech in front of the class. It's just one of the major exercises, and I think that was pivotal for me because I was naturally a shy kid, mm-hmm. and you know, having to get up in front of someone and deliver a very powerful speech like that, and that I was able to do that was really remarkable for me. But she instilled that expectation and that confidence that I could do it, and I did do it. Mm-hmm. So she's one that I would certainly look at. Another one would be my high school counselor. And she is the lady who probably recognized some of my talents, my academic talents, and suggested that I consider engineering as a potential career choice. And through sheer luck, an opportunity came along for me to go to Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan for a weekend when I was in high school to get exposure to careers and civil engineering in particular. And at that time, it was very timely because that was roughly 1970, and the Detroit riots had happened in 1968. And so Detroit needed to go through a rebuilding mode, and the importance of civil engineering to public works infrastructure is absolutely critical. That is the profession that provides our public works infrastructure. And so my high school counselor's support through high school, as well as that opportunity, really set me on a very unique path in life.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing, you know, what others can see in you. Would you know, aren't necessarily seeing your talent as being your career move, and then they're like, hey, have you considered this? And all of a sudden it's like, you're right, that's what I'm, you know, passionate about. So, you know, we talk about all sorts of different, you know, people, you know, being influential. So when you talk about the riots, how was that influential in your life?
I'm sorry, I'd say it again.
When you were talking about the riots, how were those influential, even beyond, you know, your career choice?
Sure. Well, the riots were influential in the sense that my community, Flint, Michigan, did not riot. It did not have any civil disturbance. But at that time, during 1968, there were civil disturbances throughout the United States. And what was clear and evident was that there had been a significant amount of frustration within the African-American community with respect to their treatment by police. And at that time, Detroit had a SWAT-type unit within their police department, and it had been misused toward the African-American community. And so people were very frustrated about that. At the same time, across the country, you know, the civil rights movement was very much in full bloom. And so there was a real, I think, with all the riots that were taking place in the late 1960s, I think overall it raised the consciousness of America to say, hey, look, you know, we have a very large, significant population base, African Americans, that are really feeling disenfranchised and disenchanted. And yet, you know, there are successes within that community. And I think the larger community, the white community, if you will, and the power structure stepped back and said, hey, look, we really need to view this differently and really begin to engage the African-American community in terms of opportunities and possibilities. And at that time, many universities like University of Illinois, Michigan State University, that's when they first started opening up their universities to a significant number of African-American and diverse students was in the late 1960s. Illinois was Project 500. I can't remember what the names of, what the name of Michigan State's program was, but it was a very purposeful action on the part of those institutions to say, we will open up the doors of higher education to a segment of the population that had not previously been served. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, it was a very clear watershed moment because I was coming along right after 1968, 1970, 71, and it's about when I was graduating from high school. So, you know, I was in a position to take advantage of doors opening, if you will, at higher education institutions that may not have been open to me if the riots had not happened.
Wow. That's a very powerful statement. You know, we always look at these movements, but I don't think people always appreciate that there are silver linings that come from it. There are positive things that are a result of really difficult, hard work that ends up paying off, because look at the dividends now that we have. Yes. With higher education and it being more and more accessible now.
Definitely.
You know, Illinois has started their program where they're offering 4 years of free tuition, which is absolutely amazing. You know, when I saw that, I was just so elated because I felt like this is what we're supposed to be focusing on. This is how you build our society, regardless of what race you are. This is how we all collectively build. Yes. Is when we give people that access to education. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that your parents obviously prioritized education. So tell me about your parents.
Okay. So, you know, my parents, my parents grew up in East St. Louis, Illinois, which was, you know, roughly in the late mid-50s. They graduated from East St. Louis High School. And when they graduated from high school, my aunt, on my mother's side of the family, my aunt, she had clearly focused on going to college. My mother had not. She had gotten married for, you know, about a year or two earlier. And so college was not really on the radar for her per se. But things didn't work out between my mom and my father. And so my mom returned back home from Fort Wayne, Indiana to East St. Louis. And my grandparents decided, well, it's about the same expense to send one daughter to college as it is to send two. So we'll just send both of you. Mm-hmm. And we'll take care of our grandson and your son. And you go ahead and, you know, try to matriculate. And so initially, my mom started off in nursing and found that to be very challenging. And finally, she made the move to education and became a primary grade school teacher, and very successful grade school teacher when she started and developed her career in Flint, Michigan.
It's, you know, a lot of the discussion, and this, you know, I even heard when I was in my master's program at the U of I, is that we need to see reflected in our educators the demographics that we have in schools. And it's not just at elementary, middle, or high school. You know, there was a survey that the U of I did, and one of the pieces of feedback was, I want to see in my faculty, you know, people who represent me, who look like me.
Sure.
And so how important do you think that was, that your mom was able to be one of those critical people for students to be able to see, hey, this is what I could be if I want to grow up, or at least I have that reflection when I come into this building?
Sure, sure. Well, I think it's very important. And the reason I say that is because when I was growing up in Flint, Michigan was a fairly wealthy city because of the automobile industry and all the automobile plants and the high wages that were paid to automobile workers. And so it had a very good, well-funded school system, and they recruited the best teachers that they could find. And fortunately, it was a very diverse teacher population in the city, in the school system. And so you grew up with a number of African-American teachers who were very highly credible, were very well respected, and would really work you hard to try to bring out the best in you and have you reach your potential. And so you grew up with a set of strong expectations from all your teachers, but particularly the African-American teachers, that you can succeed, you can be successful. And so that was very reinforcing. There were also, because there was such a strong mixture of races and ethnicities in Flint, there was just a lot of great role models from all different walks of life, all different ethnic backgrounds that really helped, I think, frame my perspective of the goodness in America and the kind of support that you would hope people would aspire to and live their life by. And so, you know, I grew up with a very diverse set of friends, which was very meaningful and significant to me, because it helped me as I moved into different environments where I was probably the only one African-American in a class or in a dormitory. I didn't feel that that particular aloneness, because I had a very diverse set of friends and knew how to reach out to them. So with the teachers, with the diverse set of teachers that we had and diverse administrators, it reinforced for me that there's nothing that really should be a barrier to you if you want to be successful. You just have to understand that you're going to have to work for it. Mm-hmm. The expectations are going to be there. No one's going to hand you anything. And you have the capability. You have to be and learn how to be disciplined, self-disciplined, to achieve your goals. And you have to listen to your parents and what they hope for you and the aspirations that they have for you. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, your environment is such that those aspirations aren't high, you still can have your own aspirations about who you are and who you want to become. You just have to work toward that very diligently and go forward.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about your college experience, because it sounds like, you know, that really gave you a great foundation to, you know, have that ability to, you know, just gel with everybody, you know, the situations that have come up. So what was your college experience like then?
Oh, my college experience. This was a situation, and all my friends and family know this. So I mentioned growing up in Flint, and but what happened just before I went to college, I was 17 turning 18 when I was getting ready to go to college to start my freshman year at Michigan State. And what happened was there was a tragedy in my family. There was a boating accident. And so my mom was killed in a boating accident, and as well as my stepfather at that time. And so that was just 30 days, essentially, before I went off to Michigan State University.
Oh, wow.
And so what happened was because the expectation of you're going to college had been set so firmly by my mom, my grandmother, and my family, there was no question that I was still going to go to college, in part to help fulfill her dreams that she had for me. And so it was merely a matter of just going forward and taking each day as it comes. There were certainly days that I was still grieving over the loss. But I had, what happened was I developed a great network of friends and people who genuinely cared for me and would make sure that, you know, they came by and picked me up to go to dinner or would be supportive of me in other ways. And it was just, and what happened was that all the experiences that I'd had in high school, and I wasn't known as a quote a leader in high school or anything like that, but I had had so many wonderful experiences in high school too when I got to college, and I just began to bloom. My leadership qualities and skills began to evolve, and what happened was I ended up being picked by the university to be what they call a resident assistant in one of the dormitory floors, which was a leadership position to help and guide other students as they transition into the university and to plan recreational activities for them, as well as to make available to them any sort of academic resources that they may need to make sure that they weren't sitting around depressed, make sure they had someone to talk to, to get them involved in any kind of activities that would create a wholesome environment on your floor. And so I had that job, that responsibility for 4 years in college. And, you know, it's just a remarkable kind of experience that I had. And it really helped me, obviously, grow more out of my shyness, if you will, and to become more of a leader. Mm-hmm. And so when you have to be responsible for others, people that you're only meeting for the first time, and you're going to live with them for the remainder of the year, and you're going to make sure that their experience is a positive experience, it really impacts you and puts a different level of perspective on your life and their life and how you can be impactful and supportive.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, while you were in college and you have these experiences with these students, what were some of the struggles that you saw students, particularly students of color, who were coming into the college?
Well, in many cases, in some cases, if they came from predominantly black environments, they were often uneasy being in a predominantly white environment. And so that was a challenge for some of them. And so oftentimes they wouldn't be as communicative toward majority students or white students as I felt that they should be. And they stuck a little bit more to themselves than I felt that they really needed to. Sometimes there were issues with just understanding that you're here in college to study and have fun, but sometimes the fun outweighed the studying. And mm-hmm. so you would try to encourage them to, put more time and energy into their academics. And you would, try to make sure that if they were taking certain classes that they had academic support, tutors, were going to work study sessions and things of that nature. And so those are the things that, the making the adjustment of being away from home, being disciplined about what you're there to do, understanding how to manage your time. I think that was probably one of the biggest ones, because, no one's looking over your shoulder when you're in college. It's all on you. Mm-hmm. And if you make bad decisions day after day after day, those bad decisions are going to doom you, and you're not going to be there that next semester. Are you going to be on academic probation that next semester? And so it was trying to help students make that adjustment to the fact that, yeah, you're in a different environment. Yeah, you have a lot of freedom, but you have to understand why you're here, what your purpose is, and you have to figure out where you can study. And you have to also, one of the other challenges was just making the adjustment of having roommates and adjusting to a new person mm-hmm. that, you hadn't necessarily met before. And so people have different sleeping habits. They have different, habits about when they want to get up and do something, or when they want to listen to music, or when they want to have friends over. Mm-hmm. So, this was a whole new territory for people to adjust to in a very short period of time. And it really boiled down to a lot of communication, finding, commonality, finding those areas and spaces where you could study and be productive, finding other people within your classes that you could go study with or go to the library with, and learning how to make those adjustments, not being afraid or timid about making that adjustment, but realizing that, hey, that's an adjustment I need to make, and I got to make it. Otherwise, I'm not going to do as well as I know I can. Mm-hmm. So, just to recap, just coming into a new environment, making friends of different races, self-discipline, and just making the adjustment to your time management.
Yeah. I mean, that's always one of the things I did in my grad program was a graduate assistantship. I did financial wellness for college students, undergrad and graduate, and that's one of those adjustments. All of a sudden you have money that's yours, and sometimes it flows and sometimes you save. But I think that's one of those things that, that's your time to shine, to learn to adult, because you're kind of sink or swim at that point.
Yes, right.
So, college seems like it went well for you. So what happened once you're done with those 4 years? What was the next step?
Well, actually, I went ahead and decided to go to grad school immediately. And so I finished my bachelor's degree and I started my master's degree right after that. And I made that decision because I said, well, one, I'm used to being poor. And two, I had seen my mom work and go to school at the same time. And so I knew how difficult it was to raise a family and to also have, you know, be working on your master's degree. And so I said I didn't want to do that. I think I'd rather just get it done and get it out the way now. So I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. But after I left graduate school, I went to work for a Fortune 25 company and started my business career, if you will, at that point in my life.
So tell me about your family. So at some point, it looks like you got married. I see a ring. Mm-hmm. And I always love to hear those stories because sometimes it's, you know, a high school sweetheart, a college sweetheart. But, you know, I think that's the one thing when you're trying to balance all of these goals you have in your life. And sometimes you forget about certain parts, like you're so, hey, I got my, you know, my grad degree. So, but it sounds like you got a good job after that. So when did that fall into place when you met her?
Well, what happened was I had spent about 5 years in corporate America and decided to go back into academia and get my PhD. And so I was working on my PhD at Michigan State University. And through a mutual friend had a blind date set up.
Oh.
And so I met my future and current wife through a blind date, and it worked out fantastically.
So tell me about that date, that first date with her, because especially when it's a blind date, it's always funny because it's like, I have the calculations down for school, but this is where I'm going to take that huge leap of faith.
Well, it just so happened that I was older. I was probably about 29 years old, and so I had dated and was not really, you know, satisfied with, you know, with dating per se. And by that point in time, I had become fairly clear in my mind for the criteria that I had for the woman that I wanted to eventually end up with and marry. And so, so the blind date wasn't maybe not purely blind because my good friend and I had talked quite extensively, and he says, oh, that sounds like this person over here, and maybe you ought to meet her. And so I said, okay, tell me about her. And so he told me some things about her. I said, yeah, that sounds pretty consistent. When can you introduce me? And so he kind of hemmed and hawed, and I had to come back and bug him again. And mm-hmm. So finally he went ahead and set it up, and it turned out very well.
Yeah, I mean, relationships are really just like academics. You work at it, you know, it's about how much effort you're willing to put sure. into it. And so I think that's also something that you see students also figuring out while they're in college, because mm-hmm. that's kind of their first time to really grab yes. a hold of dating
right.
and make those decisions about what's the criteria
right.
and they're figuring themselves out at the same time, figuring out deal breakers. And so that's always something that's always been fun to watch with my friends, is because some of them got married like right out of high school, then some waited. How long have you been married now?
I've been married 33 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so tell me about the rest of your family.
We have two children, two adult children. I have a son who lives here in Urbana, who attended the University of Illinois and works here in town. And I have a daughter who also attended the University of Illinois. She got married just about 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe. And her and her husband were transferred to Tokyo, Japan.
Oh, wow.
And so she is in Tokyo, Japan now. She works as a consultant and has been enjoying her consulting career. Working for various companies in the United States while she's in Japan.
Wow. So, again, sounds like education is something that is really emphasized in the family at least have that, you know, that basic education, which is great because, you know, I think that's, you know, as I was saying before we came on air, you know, you have a lot of kiddos who they're in high school, they're conceptualizing, they're seeing a dream, but maybe because it hasn't happened in their family before. Mm-hmm. They don't see college as necessarily an option, or they don't even know how to dream about college because mm-hmm. it hasn't been information passed down from sure. parents who, you know, have gone to college. So it's always good to hear those amazing success stories like yours, where you know what you want. Somebody's been incredibly encouraging and pivotal at the right time, and given you that springboard to really say, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to do it. So tell me about Coleman & Associates, because that was, you know, one of the things that I heard at the Black Chamber meeting. So you founded Coleman & Associates.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the business, why you decided to create your own.
Sure. Well, it actually happened when I was back in Michigan State working on my PhD. As it happened when I came back to Michigan State, so I've gotten my bachelor's degree from Michigan State, my master's degree in civil engineering from Michigan State. So when I came back to do my PhD, it was in the same area as my master's degree, and I'd taken all the engineering courses. And so my advisor said, well, why don't you go over to the College of Business to take courses? And so I went over to the College of Business and took a bunch of MBA courses, which, of course, was consistent with my work I'd done in the Fortune 25 company. And so the dean of the College of Engineering at Michigan State, got a phone call from some people from the state of Michigan who said, hey, look, we're looking for a consultant, a minority consultant, that can help us meet our minority and women business enterprise goals. And so he called me and said, hey, Fred, would you be interested in doing some consulting work for
wow.
the state of Michigan? I said, sure. And so that's what started my consulting career in Coleman & Associates. I started it as a sole proprietorship, meaning that I was the only person in the company, essentially, and ended up being a sub-consultant for a number of different large consulting firms that would do work for the state of Michigan, either on the transportation side or either on the management and budget side, and did that while I was working on my PhD at Michigan State. And so that's when Coleman Associates got started. When I finished my PhD and got recruited to come to the University of Illinois as a faculty member, I put Coleman Associates on the back burner because I knew that I would not have time to do consulting work and be a tenure-track faculty member. And so when 2001 rolled around, I decided to reactivate Coleman & Associates. And at that point in time, I changed the ownership, the form of company from a sole proprietorship to a subchapter S corporation. And got it incorporated here in the state of Illinois. And the company focuses on helping agencies, state, local agencies, meet their minority and women business enterprise goals. And the state of Illinois has laws on the books that encourages a number of state agencies to establish and meet minority and women business enterprise goals. And of course, several cities in Illinois also have minority and women business enterprise goals. Notably, Champaign is one, as well as, of course, City of Chicago, City of Decatur is another one, City of Peoria is another one. And so having minority women business enterprise goals provides an opportunity for those cities and those agencies to create opportunities, inclusive opportunities, to bring in minority women business enterprise entrepreneurs into their procurement processes, and to facilitate and encourage minority women business enterprises to participate and to be in a position to help that agency meet their goals.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they establish these, I think a lot of people just have this misconception that it's obligatory, and they don't necessarily see the benefits of having that requirement. So, you know, having this, you know, requirement to, like you said, bring in people, you know, women and minorities. How do you see that benefiting the community? Because I don't think a lot of people see it as, sometimes they don't see it as anything other than meeting, you know, some affirmative action, you know, mm-hmm. concept. But it really is important to have that.
Sure. Yes, it is. You know, minority and women business enterprise goals are, I would say, are probably the best way in which we have, as a society has learned to say, look, we're going to be inclusive of everyone that's in our society, particularly those people who tend to be very underrepresented when it comes to where we spend our dollars, if you're a local agency or local government or state government. And so minorities and women typically have been excluded from being involved in business and being involved in figuring out what those processes are. So it kind of goes back in some ways to the education thing. If there's fewer people coming through the educational pipeline, then there's going to be fewer people who are going to be in position to understand the complexities of doing business and handling business transactions. And so, and then when you consider the fact that not everyone goes to college higher education, but they still have a very strong entrepreneurial spirit, then why shouldn't they be allowed to participate? The benefit to the community is that you end up having a community where everyone is participating in the economic well-being of the community. And that's so critically important, because what we don't want in general society, in U.S. society, if you will, is to have large pockets of people who feel like there's no opportunity for them. This is supposed to be the land of opportunity. And so if it's the land of opportunity, then we need to make real on that virtue, on that value. And we need to make sure that we're doing all the right kinds of things to encourage people to participate in the economic mainstream of society. I view this country as a capitalist society. Okay, it's built on capitalism, which means that it's built on businesses making jobs and creating goods and services and creating opportunities for their employers and for themselves. And so if we don't, and with what I view as, and what the demographers say is slowly happening, which is that the minority populations are growing in population size, and the majority population is not growing in population size. And so you have to be in a position, if the United States is going to remain as wealthy and as significant as it is on the world economic scene, you can't have a third or half of your population not participating in economic growth of the country. That doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And so you have to step back and say, wait a minute, you know, we have to have entrepreneurs, we have to have business owners who understand the way in which our country works and our systems work, so that we are in a position to continue to produce goods, produce services, be creative, and encourage all of our citizens to be involved in the economics of our country. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that everyone has to go out and be an entrepreneur, because we know that there's always going to be, you know, governmental agencies and quasi-governmental agencies that are going to hire people to employ people. That's fine. But those people who are employed by governmental agencies and quasi-governmental agencies, they're going to buy goods and services from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that means that there is that, if you will, producer or entrepreneur class, and they're going to be very significant in terms of doing that. The other thing that's very significant, of course, is that it's a very well-known fact that small businesses create a tremendous number of jobs in the U.S. economy. They are the primary new job makers in the U.S. economy. And so if we don't do a good job of encouraging small minority and women-owned businesses as small businesses and getting them to grow and be stable and continue to grow, then we're not creating jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The other benefit of having minority and women business enterprise goals that help spur that engagement of minority and women business enterprises is that the young employees that get involved in those businesses, who get their first paycheck from someone, who learns to work and what the meaning of work is from someone who cares about them working, okay,
mm-hmm.
and is willing to maybe take a little more time and encourage them to do a little bit better, or to train them, or to help them in some way. So it's part of that mentoring cycle as well, that young people see that there are opportunities out there for me, and maybe realize, well, yeah, I did work for Mr. So-and-so when I was 14 or 15 or 16, and I learned some things. But you know what? I think if I had my own business, I think I could do it a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And to get that mindset that, yeah, you know, it is possible to do that. That, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, she owned her business for 20, 25 years. Okay, well, she employed a number of kids from the neighborhood or from the community. And that's important that they understand that, hey, I can go out and earn an honest wage doing this. I'm learning some things. I'm taking some things back to the classroom. And maybe it helps me make a career choice that I want to be take up business in college or at community college or in a trade school. Mm-hmm. That's great. So there's a certain mentorship that's part of it. There's a job growth and creation that's a part of it that I think is important for our society. And I think that, you know, the parts of it in terms of everyone participating in economic development is just really, really important, because we shouldn't have people who are sitting outside of seeing a lot of wealth being created and not feeling like that they also have that opportunity. That
right.
They are just automatically excluded because of the color of their skin or their gender or their sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I also think it's one of those things where, you know, exactly what you were saying, that you have somebody who takes personal interest in you. That doesn't happen the bigger the company is. You know, mm-hmm. you just kind of be, sometimes you're just an employee who comes through the door and they make sure that everything gets done. But, you know, the one thing that I've done when I've worked with families, parents, students, is that empowerment to where do you see the needs in your community? And when they have somebody who's personally invested in them and told them, yes, look at me, I was able to do something for myself, I think that also gives them that empowerment to say, not only can I you know, create a business for myself, but, you know, I can create a business and bring it back into my community, bring that benefit back to my community, whether it's giving back to the community or, like you said, employing people from your block, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think that's the beautiful thing about it, is you're teaching people that they have control over what's going on.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And that can be a hard thing for people to realize for themselves, especially if those opportunities aren't there. So, you know, we talk about gun violence in our community, we talk about the needs in different neighborhoods, but what would you see as far as engagement? What do you think our priority should be with engaging our youth and doing this, you know, showing them the path to be whatever it is they want to be?
Well, you know, in the Champaign-Urbana community, you know, fortunately there are a lot of businesses and organizations that are very deeply concerned about our youth and how our youth are developing. And, for example, I work with a number of different construction companies. And one of the things, and some of these, you know, most of these construction companies are minority-owned or women-owned construction companies. And one of the things that they always talk about is how they are trying to build their companies in such a way, and how they are very interested in working with youth in the community to show them the possibilities of this career path, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's true for a number of different career paths and business owners in this community. And so there are opportunities. What I see is a challenge is that there just isn't the communication. There isn't the networks of communication that I'm used to that really informs youth that there are these opportunities out there. And so sometimes it's very challenging and disturbing when I come across opportunities and I try to make it known, and I go through a network of other adults who work with youth sometimes, and you get the information in their hands, but you don't know what happens to it after that.
Mm.
And so that's a real concern, because I don't always see the turnout that I would expect for some of these opportunities that are out here.
Mm-hmm.
And there are wonderful opportunities in the Champaign-Urbana area. There are absolutely wonderful opportunities. Now, the opportunities are there. The kids, the youth have to be prepared. The opportunities are not just sitting there waiting on you to say, who's coming through the door.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunities have criteria associated with them. So they expect you to be a pretty reasonably good student. They expect you to, you know, be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, mm-hmm. if you will. They expect you to come to the opportunity neat and ready to perform and do whatever it is you need to do. So, you know, young people have to understand that the opportunities are there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people who have the opportunities are expecting a certain, you know, quality individual to walk through the door and be prepared to take advantage of that opportunity. So, you know, information networks are a challenge. I think our youth need to understand that there are expectations with respect to these opportunities, and they have to be willing to, you know, sometimes modify their behavior or dress a different way to and have the appropriate grades or whatever to take advantage of that opportunity. But I would really like to see that, you know, my sense of it is that the opportunities and the communication networks are just not as effective and efficient as I think that they should be. And so I would like to see that change somehow. I think that's a real issue. And so I think, you know, that's the one key thing that I see that would benefit the community more.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's one of the things that we're starting to realize with, you know, technology being so readily available to everybody. You know, youth are kind of inundated with all this different stimuli, and but it still doesn't quite, even though they're touching these different things that are, you know, beyond the city, beyond the state, wherever, it's not enough. And they need to have a tangible experience that's their own, that they can really, you know, own that experience, own how that benefits them. And a lot of times I think that is going to an employer and having, you know, a day that they spend and, you know, see what really is on the inside mm-hmm. of that job. Because again, you know, for me, I volunteered a lot of places, and I remember volunteering and working, and I remember working at a facility one time, and I thought, this is not what I want to do. Like, I know now for mm-hmm. sure this mm-hmm. isn't what I want to do.
Sure.
But you have to be able to have those tangible experiences.
Definitely.
And just being on your phone or just pulling up, you know, something on YouTube, that's not enough. I think they need to be
yes.
outside of these their neighborhoods, their bubbles,
right.
and be able to experience, you know, that hardcore, you know, the benefits of being able to say, I went to, you know, an attorney's office and I thought it was always so prestigious, but man, that guy was at his desk working, reading, writing, doing mm-hmm. all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different than what I thought.
Right.
Or, you know, even your mom's experience thinking nursing was it. I mean, tons of kids get to college and they change their degrees because once they're immersed, all of a sudden it tastes a little bit
right.
different.
Right.
And so, you know, I agree. I think that's where we're missing the mark.
Yeah, and it's so important for kids, particularly when they're in that teen, preteen period, to start getting exposures to careers and work opportunities
mm-hmm.
so that they begin to, you know, make the connection between work and, you know, the financial reward, but also that there's a career that you can have as well. And so, you know, you asked me, you know, what else would I like to see? What other challenges? I think, for example, a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, the City of Champaign had a big program where they had lots of different employers from around the city that would employ youth during the summer. And I haven't heard much about that recently, so I don't know if it's still going on or not.
It is. The okay. Champaign Community Coalition has taken it over.
Okay. And so I thought that was one of the really positive things that the community was doing to engage youth, to help them begin to get an understanding of careers and career paths.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage that be made even broader to companies that and industries that are here that maybe have not participated in the past, because it's so very important that our youth begin to get some understanding of what the potential is, what the opportunities are, what their career paths could be. Because if they stay in their own neighborhoods or in their own bubbles, they're never going to really get a chance to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I often feel that, you know, there are lots of youth in Champaign-Urbana who do stay too much in their own neighborhood, and they don't get those broadening experiences that shows them that there's a different opportunity, that there's a different life available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the wages, mm-hmm, are to really be able to have that other life.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are going to be some trade-offs sometime.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know that that exists, and you don't know that there's that trade-off, and you can't properly weigh what that trade-off is,
right,
to say, hey, what's the benefit of me having this kind of life versus that kind of life? If you never have that opportunity to, and that exposure to see that, you're never going to be able to make great or good decisions in terms of what path in life you're going to choose for yourself.
And I think, a lot of youth, they see the escalation of things that have happened. They've had, grandparents who have lived through the civil rights. And so they see now the kind of war zones that they're living through right now. And, that was one of the things when I was at Urbana High School, we were talking about, we need to be more trauma informed because we don't know what's coming through those doors every morning, what they're experiencing. But sometimes, like you were saying, they get caught in all of that. It's, mm-hmm, kind of like circling the drain. They want to get out. They want to, give back. They want to be empowered. A lot of my students, they would tell me about stuff that they were doing for each other and supporting each other and being there for each other. And it's like, you feel empowered to do that. Let's really set this on fire and let you be more empowered to do whatever it is. The sky's the limit. The sky should be the limit for you. But I do think it takes those exposures so they know, instead of, sometimes the sky's the limit can be overwhelming. So instead of everything is possible, this is something I'm interested in, or this is something I'm interested in. Where can I have a touch point to get involved with that? Have somebody who mentors me,
sure,
and tells me how things are could work,
Well, and that's a very important point, because it goes back to when you asked me earlier who were some critical people in my,
right,
life. And I mentioned that my high school counselor was a very critical influencer in my life. And the high school counselors who are working with these youth on a routine basis, they have an opportunity to really help set a person on a certain path.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage, and I hope that they are doing the kinds of things that properly assesses a student's interest and works to get them into an opportunity or an exposure that will help get that student or that youth in a direction that will eventually have some good results for that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because in many cases, that's the only other person that student is talking to about what they want to see in life, what they want to do in life.
Right.
And so that's a very critical role. And so I put a lot of faith and responsibility on those middle school and high school counselors to try to make sure that they're doing everything that they can to orient and direct and encourage students to explore opportunities and take advantage of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you that there needs to be more connectivity when it comes to a system that can support our youth, not just, again, I think sometimes it's so easy to conceptualize what we need to do for them, and then putting the rubber to the road gets a little bit tricky, because, we're talking about youth and their needs can change as days change. And so I would love to see that more, find ways for us to get our youth more involved, taking them out, not necessarily bringing it into the school all the time, but taking them out of the school so that they can experience,
right,
it.
Right.
'Cause I think that's what resonates the longest, mm-hmm, is, hey, like you were saying, and your examples in the beginning was, hey, we went in high school and we visited this one person, kept in touch with them. They hired me. Some of my friends also worked there. That's the experiences, just like the counselor, that's the experiences that they can start building off of to really figure out, okay, what am I going to do and how am I going to do it? Because, mm-hmm, there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of moving pieces when it comes to figuring all of that out.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Well, thank you for being on my show. I appreciate it. It was great to hear the story, especially a successful story like that, you know, you've worked really hard for what you've earned right now. And so I think that's an inspiring story for, you know, people to see that you don't have to just conceptualize. It's possible. But, you know, like our parents, grandparents said, you got to work, you know, yeah, you got to hustle for yourself.
Yeah.
So a great story to share. I'm glad that you were on the show to share that. Anything going on with Coleman and Associates that you'd like to promote real quick?
I'm working on a relaunch of the company now. I'm going to be coming out with some new services for the company for minority women business enterprise owners in September. And so all I can say right now is stay tuned. I'm really looking forward to getting that out there and helping more entrepreneurs be successful.
Yeah, so you can Google Coleman and Associates. Keep, you know, keep an eye on the website to see what new things are coming along. And, you know, if you have any other really, I'm looking for business owners right now who can share a wonderful story like Fred has today about their rise to, you know, success and being able to have that, you know, ability to give back to the community like you've been doing. So thank you, Fred, for being on my show. Tune in next week. I will also have another guest. And keep tuning in. There's a lot of different things coming up. Allerton, the new superintendent for Urbana Schools. So lots of good things coming up in the next few weeks. Thanks again, folks.
Thank you. Thank you.